You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Yes, that line pours on the right, babe. Ha! Now that Mackie is back in town. Look out, old Mackie is back.
Yeah.
Chris McMichael. Sports Radio 101.9 FM. The Fan. WFAN.
Yeah. 202 on the Fan. McMonagle here with him. I got you for 3 hours. You know the deal. Taking until 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. 888-808-1019. Fliegelman on the other side. And we're a day closer. Every day we're getting it. Just get me to Friday at 808. Game one of the World Series. And we'll talk plenty of baseball here this morning. Plenty of Yankee baseball. Juan Soto to the Mets might pop up again. It is a day that ends in Y, so I'm sure we have to talk about it. But I do want to start with the New York Giants real quick because there was some news out of today from the New York Giants as John Mara, the owner of the franchise, spoke up and answered some questions and settled some arguments and ended some debates, but still provided a big question mark for me. And if you haven't heard, John Mara, I believe at the premiere of a documentary on his late father, answered some questions about the coaching staff, answered some questions about the state of the franchise, answered some questions about his thought process right now as the season is spiraling out of control, spiraling out of possibility of winning. Another miserable season for the New York Giants is upon us at 2-5. And so the question is always asked when you're at 2-5, and now you're year three into a regime that had a successful year one, a miserable year two, and looking to have another miserable year three. What about the coaching staff, right? We've talked about it, and I've been on the record saying, look, I like Brian Daboll. I think he has shown a lot of reasons to believe he can be a good head coach in this league and is a good head coach in this league. But I've also said, hey, look, when you're an offensive coach and this is the offensive ineptitude that you continue to provide, even in the season they won, they didn't score a lot of points. Even in the season they made it to the postseason and won a game against Minnesota, they didn't score a lot of points. Joe Shane, right now, the GM of this team, and you're looking at an offensive line that's in desperate need of an offensive tackle, and they picked one in the 7th overall pick a few years ago, and he can't see the field. They got a wide receiver they drafted 3rd when they can't score points, and they had their number one stud, Malik Nabers, down for a couple weeks, and he can't see the field, can't make a play, isn't involved in the offense. These are questions that need to be asked, obviously, for some, not so much for me. But the question about the running back position and Saquon Barkley dominating the Giants in the Eagles uniform and Bill Belichick openly questioning it. Oh, just for a couple million bucks, they decided to go get a guard or something instead of bring back their best player. All the different things circulating this team. And the one thing I will say is I give the owner credit for stepping up right now and ending it. Because the last thing you need is wild speculation constantly over and over again. The head coach, the GM, not so much the GM because he doesn't have to answer the questions, but the head coach constantly have to answer the question about whether or not he's worried about his job security. Does he feel like he's coaching for his job and all that? So to come out, and John Mara did come out and say he does not expect any changes this season, and certainly that would be the right thing. Firing Brian Daboll mid-season would be a mistake of just, I mean, it's hard to say epic proportions when your team is 2-5, but it would do nothing to benefit this team in any way, shape, or form. So that would just be stupid. And while John Mara has not been successful in his latest run over the last decade of running this franchise, I don't think anybody thinks he's stupid. And that would just be dumb. But he also went out there and said that he does not expect any changes in the offseason. So they are running it back. Brian Daboll, Joe Shane will be back. He will stick to this plan, to this group moving forward. And again, I like many aspects of this because you are seeing some young Drew Phillips and some other young prospects and draft picks that are developing quite nicely. And I do think Joe Shane acquitted himself, in my mind, very well in the Hard Knocks offseason edition with some sound football decisions. Some of them can be mocked now because the team is 2-5, and that happens whenever you lose. But I do have some faith in this group. But here is my main problem with what's going on from the owner, what's going on with the organization right now, and it's the idea that they have multiple, they have these two contradictory ideas right now, because not only did he say Brian Daboll will be back, and again, I think Brian Daboll is a pretty good head coach, and ultimately I have no problem with moving forward with him. He'll be back with Joe Shane, and again, I think Joe Shane is a smart football man who's been successful, and I don't necessarily think it's been a disaster where you have to move on from him, so I'm okay with moving forward. But he also stated again the confidence in Daniel Jones, and let me be clear on this one thing. The New York Giants, if they are going to move forward, if they are going to move forward with this head coach, and they are going to move forward with this GM, who were specifically brought here because of the job they did in Buffalo as assistant GM and offensive coordinator, both helping draft Josh Allen and then develop him into, and we remember he was the project quarterback. Him and obviously Lamar Jackson were the two project quarterbacks of that draft class. And to take him, develop him into what he is now and what he was, what he has been and what he was that last year with Brian Daboll, the second to last year with Brian Daboll. Like, they transformed a project quarterback into one of, if not, you know, the most talented quarterback in the NFL. This side of, obviously, Patrick Mahomes. That's why they were hired. That's what gave them the resume. That's what put their foot in the door. And that's what the Giants were hoping to bring here with Daniel Jones. Fine. It hasn't worked with Daniel Jones. And for the owner to come out and say, hey, we're being stable here. We're keeping our coach. We're keeping our GM. And you know what? I still have faith in this quarterback, and I believe he gives us the best chance to win. That's what the coach is saying. It doesn't make any sense. Because if you are going to stick with this coach and this GM, the only thing that makes sense is to allow them to draft and pick their quarterback of the future. And if you continue to play Daniel Jones, if you continue, especially now that you're locked into the future, to try and win every game you can, it is contradictory to what is the best suited strength of both of these gentlemen. The strength is developing and drafting and assessing the quarterback position. And if you continue to play Daniel Jones, and God forbid he gets hurt, and this, like he does every single year, by the way, and he gets hurt, and now he's on the roster for next year, locked in, you are cutting the legs out from this GM and coach to do what they do best. We're at the point now, 3 years in, that halfway through the year, heading into week 8, they need the vote of confidence from their owner. We're heading into a week 8 of year 3 that the questions have risen to such a level that the owner feels it necessary to come out and give that vote of confidence, to say they're going to stick with him. So that means we're on the borderline of this regime failing. We're right there on the precipice of this regime failing. And if it fails without letting them do what they were specifically brought here because of what they did in the past and because of what you hope they could transform this team into with a young quarterback, if they never get that opportunity because of your stubbornness with the quarterback, it's going to be the biggest shame in recent Giant memory. Because You can't stick with him and then not allow him to do what he does best. You saw his face talking about Jaden Daniels in the Hard Knocks offseason edition. The coach is dying. I don't care what he says in the postgame. I don't care what he talks about Daniel Jones, and it's not all on him, and he's made some plays, and we're sticking with him because it's the best chance to win. We know they want to move on. We know they deem it a mistake, the contract they give him. We know where the future of this team is, and it's not with Daniel Jones. Why not? I know you want stability. You've just provided it with the coach and the quarterback. Don't be stupid and go the extra mile and provide the stability of the quarterback position when all it can do is hold you down and limit the opportunity of letting these two guys do what they were brought here to do. It's counterproductive to continue to roll out Daniel Jones if you are moving forward with Dable and Shane. Those two ideas are diametrically opposed. And I know they're connected, even though he didn't draft him, because he gave him the contract. I know they made that decision to franchise tag the most popular player and best player on the team in Saquon Barkley and give the contract to this quarterback and pay him the big money. And furthermore, double down on it and openly talk in front of HBO cameras about how the idea is not to pay your $40 million quarterback and then rely on the running back. I get it. So they aren't completely diametrically in opposition. They're not completely severed of any blame or responsibility or ties to Daniel Jones. I understand that. But if you're going to stick with them, if you are talking about a stability of a franchise and you're tired of hiring, firing coaches and GMs and you believe in these two and you want to build forward with them, and it's not just about next year, right? If it was just about, hey, we're going to give them one more year, like, it's almost as if, hey, these are the guys I've decided to roll with. I believe in them. The NFL sometimes takes long, you know, paths back to being on top. We've been hindered by the decision of the quarterback. We got hindered by the idea that this rebuild was kind of cut short by a successful first year. But I do believe in what they do. I do believe in how smart they are. And I'm going to go forward with them beyond this year. They're the new regime I'm rolling with. If that's what you're going to do, the New York Giants desperately need to move on from Daniel Jones today, not at the end of this year, today. Because what's the point if they're stuck with him next year? What's the point if they don't begin this process of finding their next young quarterback? What's the point if they're rolling out Daniel Jones again next year? Because as great as Brian Daboll may be, and as much as I think he's a good offensive coach and has an opportunity to be so, it's not working with Daniel Jones anymore. I don't know how much we need to see. He doesn't throw the ball down the field. The stud wide receiver is claiming he's open. The coach reinforces that and says, yes, he was open sometimes. It's just, what else do we need to see? They had one good year where they coached mistakes out of him and told him to look for his first read. Well, first they told him, hand the ball off, and then if we ever do pass, look for your first read, and then tuck it and run. And that got them through an easy schedule and a couple of big-time defensive plays and a couple of fourth-quarter comebacks and one playoff win. And since that moment, it's failed them at every turn. You want to keep the coach? Fine. You want to keep the GM? Fine. You want to move forward with the triumvirate of the three of them and throw the quarterback in the mix? It makes no sense. The only reason to keep Brian Daboll and Joe Shane is to give them the ability to do what got them the job. Get a young, inexpensive quarterback here, develop him, turn him into a franchise leader, and take the rest of your assets and build up this roster. That's how it needs to be done. And every day, every snap, every play that Daniel Jones is the quarterback for the New York Giants puts a possibility of not having that future come to fruition. It doesn't make any sense. We've already established now the owner's going to keep the coach. The only fear of not trying to go out and win is that the team could fall apart, right? That's your fear. It could get so ugly and so bad. You could have another Ben McAdoo situation on your hands. You've just given this coach the backing. You've just given the GM the backing. And don't tell me momentum plays and you don't want to end the season that way. Like, it doesn't matter. We've seen it before. They ended the season with a great playoff run and a win in Minnesota, and they opened up the next year with a 40-0 loss to the Cowboys. They're 2-5 again last year, and they won some games down the stretch last year and beat the Patriots at the end of the year and beat the Eagles at the end of the year. What did it mean? The only reason to keep winning is if you were unsure about the coach and you wanted to see if he could galvanize the group. Now that you're sure about the coach, I don't care about that. All I care about is moving forward. All I care about is making sure this franchise is in steady hands at the quarterback position. And every snap and every play that Daniel Jones is out there with the ability of getting hurt and making it impossible to continue that plan next year is a bad snap and a bad play and a bad game. Win or lose. There is no more winning with Daniel Jones. There is no more winning with Daniel Jones. Even if they win, they can't win. It's time to move on. Keep the coach. Keep the GM. Move on from the quarterback. Allow them to do what they do. Otherwise, you're just spinning our wheels here. It makes no sense to continue to show faith in Daniel Jones once you've established this group that is running the show is coming back. The coach clearly wants to move on. The GM is trying to move on. It's not about winning anymore. At 2-5, it's no longer about winning. It's about building this team. And the only thing that is absolutely detrimental to this team building forward next year is an injured Daniel Jones. And considering he gets hurt every single year, every game he plays is only an opportunity to bring that end. There is no positive end. There's only the worst case scenario left on the table. Eliminated. Eliminated. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Obviously, we're going to do a ton of the World Series. We'll get into it. I want to talk about the two teams and the bottom of the lineups, the non-stars, the group that could. I've talked a lot already about how I think the bullpen and the innings you get from the starters are one of, if not the key matchup of this World Series. We all know Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, how important they are. We all know how Judge, Soto, Stanton, how important they are. How does this team match up when you get past five or six in the lineup? And how long are these offenses? And how deep are these offenses? And who are the guys who need to step up if they're going to bring a World Series title back to the New York Yankees? We'll do a little bit of that. We'll get to the Jets as well. And we'll get to Juan Soto and the New York Mets and the comments made by David Stearns and how we can read into it. And who's going to hamstring the organization or how much money they have to spend. We'll get to it all on this Thursday morning, one day away.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
One day away from Game 1 of the World Series.
Start some trouble and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 224. McBonagle here with you on the Fan. 888-808-1019. Taking you till 5 o'clock and the warm-up show. We got to also talk, speaking about the warm-up show, I got to hang out with the warm-up show guys today. I got to hang out with the morning show guys today. Other than G, we were at the Craig Carton New York State Broadcaster Hall of Fame induction. And I'll get to it, but Evan Roberts is a interesting dude. I love him. I love him. I do. I genuinely love the dude. He just doesn't use his head sometimes. So we'll get into the weirdness of Evan Roberts riding the subway with Al Dukes, which is something I wasn't sure I'd ever do. And just a couple stories from that, as well as obviously all the sports stuff here on the Fan. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Steve in Fairport, New York. What's up, Steve?
C-Mac, how you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Good, sir. It's been a little while. You're doing a fantastic job, and I can't wait for your next move whenever and wherever that may be.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Hey, so this is a perfect... I've been wanting to make this take for about a week now. What a perfect time. So John Mara made those comments at a showing of The Duke, which obviously is a docuseries about Wellington. Mm-hmm. Follow me on this one. Wellington Mara is the godfather of this family, right? Jersey guy, hardworking. Mm-hmm. And John is Fredo. And Fredo gets slapped around every week by Mo Green, but he doesn't get slapped around in Vegas. He gets slapped around at home when the Giants are celebrating 100 years of their franchise history. He gets slapped around at home when Saquon Barkley comes back and just trounces them. When you looked at Hard Knocks, it looked to me like, and this is just my thought, but he walked around that building like he was the night janitor trying not to wake anybody up. And, you know, for him to go into a meeting room and to say to his general manager, you know, I don't want to lose Saquon Barkley, and if I do, I'm not going to get any sleep. And to have Joe Shane look at the other guys. Now, they weren't laughing directly at John. No. They were laughing about his uneasiness about losing Saquon.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Wellington had walked in the room and the same thing happened? He would have put an unfiltered Marlboro out in Joe Shane's.
Well, I don't know.
They're two different people.
Yeah, I mean, they're two different people.
John just doesn't have the stones to make a decision and stand by.
If he wanted to
keep Saquon, he should have said to Joe Shane, "Look, I own this building. I own the chair you're sitting in. You find a way to keep this guy. It's all shell money anyway. Move the money around and keep this guy. He's the best player we've had on this damn team, this terrible team, in 15 years, and he's the only reason some people come to the games. Keep him."
I understand your point, and I agree on some level about his mentality, comparing it to his father, but I think what you just said would have been the absolute wrong thing to do. I think when you...
But it's the way he felt.
It doesn't matter.
I'm not saying whether it's right or not.
No, but that is how he felt. But you know what he did? He allowed the GM he hired to do his job, and that's exactly what he should do. Because
he didn't allow the GM he hired to do his job about Daniel Jones, though.
Sure he did. Why didn't he?
Because he's the one who kept him when nobody else wanted him. You know he leaned that way.
No, he leaned that way, but he leaned Saquon Barkley's way, and Saquon Barkley's not here. I think Joe Shane made the decision Joe Shane made. I think he leans Daniel Jones. There's no doubt about it. He likes Daniel Jones. He came out when Joe Shane was hired and said, you know, we've ruined Daniel Jones. I'm hoping we can figure it out with Daniel Jones. He's still saying, he's still calling Daniel Jones his quarterback.
Yeah. I understand. Sorry. And I'm actually a big Daniel Jones guy. The owner of the team.
Yeah, but the owner of the team can't meddle. You hire a guy. You can't go in and force him to do decisions. Because if you're going to do that, then why have a GM? Let's just run it like Dallas, and let's have Jerry Jones run the show. Like, he hired a GM. It's his. He made his point clear, and I don't think they were laughing at him. I think the idea that it was uneasy, and you could see at different times.
They were laughing at how uneasy he was.
And you can tell at different times in that he was uneasy having to go to John Mara with this about Saquon Barkley.
He didn't want
Saquon Barkley. He didn't kick down John Mara's door and say, "Hey, old man, we're not keeping him." Like, it wasn't that disrespectful or anything. But I understand.
No, I agree. But, you know, there's been one constant over this last 15 years of lousy football, and it's been John Mara. It really has.
Well, listen, that I understand, but it's hiring the wrong people. I mean, that's really what it is. I don't expect, you know, and there's been a lot of stuff about, you know, nepotism and having his brother be part of the show. And, like, that was a conversation for a while, letting his brother be so involved in development and the family being so involved. I don't know if it's that. I think they hired some bad people. I think the last good hire was made by his father. And now we'll see. Maybe this is a good hire. We'll see. I'm still open to the idea that at least Brian Daboll can be a really good head coach. I mean, I'm still open to the idea that Joe Shane could be a good GM. But the last proven good hire was when his father hired Tom Coughlin against Ernie Accorsi's judgment. At least that's how it's been reported, that Ernie Accorsi didn't love Tom Coughlin, but Wellington Mara insisted on it. That was the last great hire that this organization has made. Since then, it's been a bunch of bad ones, and we'll find out about these next two. But I disagree. Like, are him and his father different? Sure. We have the same conversation about the Steinbrenners. It doesn't mean it's good or bad. And in fact, I disagree with you that he should have been like, "Hey, I want Saquon, figure it out." That's not what you should do. The owner should not go hire a GM and have faith in him. And then if that decision that you wanted to make, he goes against you and that decision fails and blows up in their face, then fire him if you want. And say, "Hey, look, I trusted you. You were wrong. It's cost us. I'm hiring someone else." That's well within his rights. But when you hire someone, you don't go into the office and say, "Hey, listen, this is all, you know, funny money anyway. It's monopoly money, and it's mine, by the way. So I want Saquon Barkley. Do it." That's not the way you should handle business in the NFL. It's just not. And I respect John Mara for being uncomfortable with it and allowing Joe Shane to do it. And now continuing to show faith in Joe Shane, even though it's another 2-5 season. And yeah, they had an embarrassing game, publicly at least. I mean, I didn't feel like it was embarrassing. As a Giant fan, I wasn't embarrassed that Saquon Barkley ran all over them. Not any more than I've been embarrassed over the last 10 years. But publicly, I can't deny that there's some embarrassment there. That Saquon Barkley ran for 13 yards short of a career day against the New York Giants as they pummeled the Giants again and sent them to 2-5. Yeah. And the offense is continually broken. And I respect him for coming out and saying what he said today. And I think it's probably good for the franchise to have some stability here. And if you believe in the guys, have faith in them. Tell them what you think. Like, because there's both sides to that conversation that you mentioned in Hard Knocks. Some people might feel your opinion where John Mara, you know, was kind of, his uneasiness was laughed at, and it was an awkward moment, and it was a dumb, some people, you know, thought he should be more forceful and whatever. And then there's the other side where people were getting on him saying, "Oh, he looks bad here. You know, we all know the running back position is the running back position, and what kind of owner goes in there and says, oh, because of jersey sales, and he's the fans' favorite player, we should sign him." Like, I think both of those narratives are dumb, quite frankly, or at least wrong. There's a middle of ground. He's well within his rights to just to show concern and alert the GM to the fact, like, "Hey, we've been bad. There's one guy this team rallies around. There's one guy this fan base loves. There's one guy that they come to see. Let's just be aware of that." That's well within his rights. anybody, and a conversation that probably needed to be had, not just could be had, needed to be had. Hey, this is a business. This is entertainment. After all, we sell tickets, you know. It is a business. And we learn that every once in a while when it pops up. This is a business. It's well within the owner's rights to say, hey, look, you do you, but just be aware. This is our best player. This is our most popular player. This drives ticket sales. He drives jersey sales. He's our guy. You want to get rid of him? Fine, but just be aware of that before you do. That's absolutely a worthy conversation to the owner to have. And on the other side, if he would have went too far and said, hey, look, he's our guy, you're keeping him, that would have been wrong. It would have been wrong. I thought John Mara handled himself fine. And I have no problem with John Mara and what he said today, other than, and I'm not putting keeping Daniel Jones playing at the foot of John Mara. If that's how it came out in the open, it's not. I'm just trying to say, all right, once we've made that decision, now make the other one. We're going to keep them? Fine. Now get rid of the quarterback. I wasn't trying to say that the owner is gung, even though he is, and he's still calling Daniel Jones as quarterback. I don't think it's his. I think he's willing to let them make that decision. I don't think he's gone into Joe Shane's office and said, you're playing Daniel Jones. I think he likes Daniel Jones. I think he wants to see Daniel Jones play, but he's not forcing that on Joe Shane. That's Joe Shane. But all I'm saying is, once you make the decision to stick with this group that is best known for, that was hired for, that they put themselves on the map with drafting and developing Josh Allen, a young quarterback that has now led the Buffalo Bills to division titles and AFC championship games. If you're going to hire those people and now stick with them, you cannot allow. Like, the Giants have to move on. Now that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll have their vote of confidence and they're going to be the head coach. Because I think Joe Shane and Brian Daboll in specific coached a lot of this year as if his job was on the line. That was reported early on in the season, that he believes he's coaching for his job. Well, now if that pressure is off and he believes he's no longer coaching for his job and he's been publicly given the vote of confidence, go out there and do the right thing and move on from Daniel Jones and make sure that you're not stuck with his contract next year. It's time to move on from Daniel Jones. It's not all his fault. He's not the worst thing I've ever seen. But he's developed habits, whether it's his fault or not. He's become gun-shy, whether it's the offensive line's fault and this franchise's fault for the inability to build one up, whatever the case may be. We're talking so much about the owner's comments. I go back to the comments he made when he hired Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, talking about Daniel Jones. We have done everything in our power to ruin this young man, when he was talking about the quarterback, when he's talking about Daniel Jones. We have done everything in our power to ruin this young man. And pretty much, I don't think it's fair. He hasn't been given a fair shake. I go back to those comments all the time because, to me, it's the old joke about unscrewing a light bulb. You can't unruin someone. If you acknowledge that you have ruined him, and maybe they have, and maybe he could have been better if given opportunities elsewhere, and maybe we'll see that later on down the line in his career, like we've seen with Sam Darnold, like we've seen with Geno Smith. But once you acknowledge you ruined him, the point of that isn't to unruin him. The point of that isn't to figure out how to get the best out of him now. The point is, learn from it and don't ruin the next guy. Ruined is ruined. And Daniel Jones, whether it's his fault, the organization's fault, whether he has the ability or not, and he was stifled, whatever, he's ruined. He's ruined. He's ruined right now in this uniform for this team. It's ruined. Don't ruin next season's ability to get a new quarterback by continuing to run him out and get hurt and be stuck with him next year. Because he's ruined this year. He'll be ruined next year. He'll be ruined the year after that. Not in this uniform. Not with this team. It's not going to work. Time to move on. Keep the coach. Keep the GM. Get rid of the quarterback. 888-808-1019. Dan, I see you. We're going to transition into the baseball as we move along here in the show. Quick break. Come back. Yankees are in the World Series. We got big decisions to make in the lineup. We got guys at the bottom of the lineup who are going to be very impactful for both teams. I think you could argue the bullpen, and I think you could argue whose non-stars play best are going to have a major impact in this World Series.
Need to get out of a meeting? Call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS Live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 243. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. 888-808-1019. Is it Friday yet? We need to get to this World Series, and we need to get there now. Too many days, too much time to talk about where Juan Soto is going to go next year. And we'll get to Stearns' comments about how they see this offseason and the flexibility they have financially, and how also, you know, they don't want to do anything to hamstring that financial stability of moving forward year after year after year. And I guess there is a conversation about what kind of GM or what kind of president of baseball operations he wants to be and who he wants to emulate. And we know he's coming from a small market. I think there is a combination that everybody, money and smarts, money and different ways of thinking and building a team. And you could have a conversation around Brian Cashman, too. And we'll get to maybe some of the Brian Cashman comments, which I did touch on the other day. But has now blown up. I touched on yesterday, I believe. But everyone just seems to think, oh, you got a small market team. You've done really well with it, right, Milwaukee? So surely, if you add money to it, I mean, oh, it's just going to be a great balance of the two. And I mean, that makes tons of sense. And you look at the high-priced GMs and you go, man, oh, if Cashman had to deal with what Stearns had to deal with out Milwaukee, he would have failed and this one would have failed. But let's just not forget, to his point about wanting to keep the flexibility, heavy lies the crown. Heavy lies the crown of having that financial flexibility. You have to go out and spend big money when opportunity presents itself. You have to go. Like, the fans won't understand why you don't go out and get someone or do something to a team that just falls short. Say next year they're in the NLCS again with a better team, perhaps, scoring more runs, more dominant, but don't get to the World Series. Figure out a way to stub their toe. And suddenly it's like, well, we don't have enough. Let's go out and get the next big star. Well, the next big star is kind of 31, 32. I don't know. Blah, blah. No, it doesn't matter. Need that guy. And suddenly that guy hampers the team a little bit. Now you're in some, like, Giancarlo Stanton, for example. Right? 2017, you fall just short. The offense doesn't score runs. Let's go out and get the MVP. Now, he's been utterly brilliant in the postseason, but I think any Yankee fan, even ones who love Giancarlo like myself, and who have defended Giancarlo like myself, would have to admit, you know, his aging has been far worse than we could have ever imagined. He misses time constantly. He hasn't been anywhere near the MVP caliber player during the regular season, at least, that he's been prior to becoming a New York Yankee. And in many ways, he's hampered their ability to have successful seasons and be the number one seed and have better playoff matchups like they had this year. I mean, but up until this moment where he's killing it, people have killed Brian Cashman for that. Whoa, what a terrible trade. Those are the kind of things you kind of have to do. Those are the kind of moves the fan base will clamor for. You don't have the ability of the Rays to trade away successful players and get back younger, more players that'll help you in the future and be that kind of smart organization. You can't afford to not sign stars. You can't. We'll find out. It is not as easy as just, hey, look at what he did in Milwaukee. Add money to that. Here we go. So we'll see if he leans more towards let's be smart, or he leans more towards, hey, I got some money. We got a core here that can win. We would just, in the NLCS, let's go win a championship and spend some money and bring in Juan Soto and bring in Corbin Burns and bring in this one and that one. And it sounds all wonderful until Corbin Burns, like every other pitcher in this league, you know, I'm not rooting for it necessarily, goes down with an injury. Now where are you? When you got $33 million or more than that invested in a starting pitcher who doesn't pitch. Heavy lies the crown. 888-808-1019. But that's a conversation we can continue to have after next week. Right now, we are uber-focused on the World Series. Let's get to your calls on it. Dan in Massachusetts. What's up, Dan?
Yeah, hiya, Mac. As you know, my two teams are the Yankees and the Dodgers. Yeah. I watch every game. I know the Dodgers inside and out. And, you know, it's like 77 and 78 when they played each other.
Yeah.
I didn't have to sweat anything because I loved both teams. I didn't root against anybody. Not like I had to sweat the Dodgers playing the Padres and the Mets or the Yankees and Cleveland to some degree. You know, I can relax now. But
you can relax knowing you win either way.
Well, I love both teams, you know.
But you got to I'm sorry. There's no way, Dan. You can't avoid it. Ultimately, you'd rather have one win than the other.
Honest to God, I really don't root against either one. I won't.
It's not rooting against, but there's got to be one. You're telling me right now, game 7 of the World Series, bottom of the ninth, tie game, Ohtani versus Weaver, or like, what do you want there? You want a strikeout just to continue the game? Do you want the game-winning hit? Do you want the Yankees to rally in the 10th? Like, you got to want something there, no?
Honestly, I don't know if that's going to happen this year, but in the past it hasn't been. Now, as far as the teams, how I see it, it's a toss-up. If the Dodgers had a couple of their starting pitchers that are missing and two strong relievers, then I'd say the Dodgers are definitely better. But you were talking earlier about the lineups and everything, the bottom nine. But by the way, let me ask you a question. Who do you think is the best clutch hitter on the Dodgers?
The best clutch hitter? I mean, right now, if you look when you talk about clutch, Ohtani's on a crazy run with runners in scoring position. He's hitting about like 700 or something crazy number. He's like 15. He's like 17.
Well, that was before.
He's like,
he got cooled off.
Well, no, with runners in scoring position, he's been great. Well, I mean, if you're going to go Kiki Hernandez is one of these guys who just show up in the postseason and have continued to be great. Edmund obviously had an NLCS. Muncy's gotten on base at an incredible clip. So, having watched the Dodgers as much as you, like right now, who scares me the most, especially heading into game one and the numbers against him, Cole against Kiki Hernandez, and what he's done in the postseason, he transforms himself into a different type of player. Kiki Hernandez is the guy, like at the bottom of the lineup, who kind of.
All right, I'm going to tell you. I got a comment on Gerrit Cole, but I'm going to tell you the best clutch hitter on the Dodgers during the year is Freddie Freeman, without question.
Right,
Freddie Freeman. But now his ankle.
I'm sorry, I thought we were talking about the bottom of the lineup. I know I said Ohtani, but
the bottom of the lineup.
Well, Freddie Freeman is one of the great hitters. Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, Betts is a Hall of Famer. Ohtani's a Hall of Famer. I got to see Freddie Freeman playing. Before I can get, in the box, I'm still afraid of him, but he's so hobbled. I'm a little, he's on the back burner of my mind, which might not be fair. But
you're right, because it isn't only in the field, but the Dodgers had a great, Tommy Davis, a great player, and he busted his ankle one time, and he was never the same hitter.
Right.
So it affects you. But what I will tell you about, as far as the bottom, the last three for the 7, 8, 9 hitters for the Dodgers, it all depends on if it's a righty or a lefty going for New York. The actual best team that I think they have is if, Rojas, the shortstop, if he can play, because he's had a muscle pull, he can play shortstop and you can play Tommy Edman in center field.
Yeah.
That's their best solid team.
Right.
Okay. Other than that, I mean, it's pretty close, you know. But the thing I wanted to tell you about Gerrit Cole before you cut me off. Gerrit Cole, to me, I don't like him in a big game.
Oh.
I don't like his body language. He doesn't exude any kind of confidence in me. The guy isn't, he's not Andy Pettit or El Duque or, David Wells. The guy doesn't show any emotion. I during the season when I'm rooting for the Yankees, I worry about the guy when he's out there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I disagree with you. I think he's been very good in the big moments in his career. And for the Yankees, he won the one game they absolutely had to win this postseason, and thankfully they haven't faced that very much. They had one game this postseason they had to win, in my mind. That was game four against the Royals, and he was nails.
You're right. And I'm not saying he doesn't have big games, but I like those other guys, like Andy Pettit, when that guy's taking him on, I used to have all kinds of confidence in him.
Yeah, I mean, I had confidence in him in game six of the 2001 World Series, and he gave up 13 runs. So, I mean, I'm not trying to knock Andy Pettit. What I'm saying, if you look at Andy Pettit, and Evan says this a lot, he's 100% true. Andy Pettit was himself in the postseason. That's it. He faced better teams because the best teams make it in the postseason. So to be yourself when you're a damn good player is impressive in the postseason. Many guys are worse in the postseason considering the opposition's ability. Andy Pettit, if you look at his career numbers, are identical in the regular season as they are in the postseason. I mean, he was just himself. Derek Jeter, same thing, a little bit better. Derek Jeter was probably, off the top of my head, I'll look at the numbers during the break. Derek Jeter might have been slightly better in the postseason, but Derek Jeter was pretty much himself in the postseason. That's what made him special. It wasn't that he went on these incredible runs. Like Kiki Hernandez is a guy I mentioned, he turns himself into a better player. Now, his better version is still not as good as Derek Jeter, but like he's an average to so-so player at his best during the regular season. He becomes a great player in the postseason. Tommy Pham is a guy like that. He scares the hell out of me when he steps into the box in the postseason. There's something about him. He's hitterish. He's tough. He's a tough out. Maybe some things that just get lost over the course of 162, but in a short series, these are guys who step up and become better. But when you're looking at stars, and Giancarlo Stanton clearly has gone on this run where he's even better in the postseason, but you look at the stars, you just want them to be themselves. Like, you don't need Judge to go on some crazy run and hit three home runs every game. You just need him to hit three home runs in a seven-game span because that's what he does normally. At least two home runs in a seven-game span. Like, he just needs to be himself, hit 300, drive in runs, have good at-bats. You don't need him to be an absolute force and hit a home run every time up. If you do, you're probably in trouble. And that's a lot of those Yankee teams. They weren't, you know, they had clutch ability, but they were just good players who continued to be good in the postseason. And I'm sorry, but I trust Cole. I trust Cole to the point we're going to have a conversation maybe later today, certainly tomorrow, getting into the game, that I haven't seen anyone address. I know Evan was saying this, and I still don't know if anyone's addressed it. I just listened to the Talkin' Yanks podcast. They didn't mention it about Cole trying to pitch three times in the series. Cole going 1-4-7. And twice on short rest if needed. Now, when you say no emotion with Cole, here's a couple things. And they mentioned this on the broadcast. God knows Bob Costa said it 10, 15 times. He wears his emotions on his sleeve. Like, is he overly emotional? Does he go absolutely nuts? He has his moments after big outs where he'll show some passion, no doubt. He definitely does. I don't think it's fair to say he has no emotion. I remember, I don't know if you, not that it was a huge game. It wasn't a postseason game, but that complete game shutout against the Astros in Houston, he showed emotion in that game. He shows emotion. He tries to keep it under wraps, which was something that led to the ability of Carlos Rodon to feed off of that and not show so much emotion and keep it under wraps and keep it under control. And it served him much better in his last two starts compared to his first one. But Cole, you can tell early on, and it is a negative for me. This is a bit of a negative because it gives it to the opposition. You can tell early on if he's unhappy with his stuff. If he's unhappy with his stuff, if he's unhappy with his location, if he's unhappy with the pitch, he immediately shows it. So you can get a read on Cole, like, hey, guys, look at this. Look at his face. He's not happy with his location on that fastball. Let's sit breaking ball for a while. Or vice versa. Like, that's twice he's thrown the knuckle curve. He's bounced it, and you could tell he's frustrated with it. We're eliminating that pitch. If he throws it for a strike, he's got us. But I don't trust he could throw it for a strike. Like, I think those things play into it sometimes. But do I trust Gerrit Cole? Hell yes, I trust Gerrit Cole. Is he an ace? You bet your ass he's an ace. And yes, I believe in him in a big game. And I can't wait to see him take the mound. Now, it's a long layoff again. I do think the long layoff had something to do with his poor performance in game one of the ALDS. But this is the World Series. He better figure out a way to overcome that now. And again, I got to check today. I got to be honest. I had the Craig thing. I drove home. I took my son to practice. I came home. I crashed. I needed to. I slept here for like an hour and a half. I haven't had a chance. And then I rushed over here. I didn't see any Boone comments today about it. I don't know if he was asked. As of yesterday, nobody had asked him. But in my mind, Gerrit Cole pitching three games in this series has to be on the table. Gerrit Cole going 1-4-7 has to be an option. I know it's a long layoff has done him harm, but it also has... You talk about a guy who's hardly pitched this year considering the injury. His arm should be mid-season form. He's had multiple long stretches here. He should be built. He should be extremely fresh, and they need him. They desperately need him because I don't even need zeros necessarily. Obviously, you want zeros. I need innings. I honestly believe when you look at this matchup, how the Yankees played in the ALCS and how it worked out for them, and how the Dodgers clearly rely on their bullpen. And really looking at maybe Yamamoto, the only one who can give them depth. I mean, you could possibly get it from Flaherty if he's really on top of his game. But in game one, with how they've been successful, if he pitches well and they have a lead, they're going to go to that bullpen. This Dodger team goes to the bullpen. So I think a big key to this series is which starting pitching group, which clearly this favors the Yankees, can get deeper into the game. So I need innings from Cole. More than zeros. I know that sounds weird, but I really feel like if he gives them 3 runs, 7 innings, I feel better about that than almost, you know, 1 or no runs and 5 innings. Like, I need the innings because I can't have Tim Hill face Ohtani 4 times in the first 3 or 4 games. Like, you can't have it. You can't have it. You can't let these guys constantly see our top-end relievers. We saw what happened at the end of that series against Cleveland. They need to be fresh. They need to not have the look. Like, Tim Hill comes at you from a left. Nestor Cortez helps this, but Tim Hill's there lefty right now. He comes at you from a funny angle. You see that 3 or 4 times, suddenly it's not that funny. Like, you got to be able to limit how much they see these back-end relievers that are so important to the Yankees. And I don't know if Clark Schmidt's capable of it. I certainly don't know if Luis Gil is capable of it. And so for me, it's Rodon and it's Cole. And if off of half a season pitching, off of all of this long rest, if Cole can do what, I don't know, a 40-year-old Andy Pettitte did in 2009 and go out there and pitch multiple games on short rest in the World Series to bring the Yankees a championship and go innings in all of those games, that's how he secures his legacy. And we're going to spend more time on this tomorrow, but that's how him and Judge, the two superstars before Juan Soto got here, and the two players in their prime, and how we talk about not ruining the prime of those two players, that's the moment for Gerrit Cole to step up. I think he is huge in this series.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.